Page 33. Traveling Abroad, It's Easier Than You Think, by David McElroy. Editor's note: Dave and his wife, Pam Drake, are both totally blind. This was their first trip to Europe, though both had traveled internationally with their families. Traveling to international destinations as a blind person is fun. It can be challenging, rewarding, informative, and frustrating. But through it all, it's just plain fun. Start with a bit of planning, and you're on your way. It all started over dinner one night early last summer. I mentioned that with a significant birthday coming up for Pam, we should think about going somewhere neither of us had been before. This led to some thought, as both of us have traveled throughout our lives. I had been to continental Europe in my youth, she to Nicaragua some years back. But neither of us had been to the UK, Ireland, where Pam had family, to Strasbourg, France, where my brother-in-law lives, nor to Spain. Page 34. So the planning stage was on. Using advice from my internet contacts, as well as such mostly accessible websites as Travelocity and Expedia.com, we booked airfare, hotels, and trains, though some arrangements, such as a Eurostar, were made by phone from England. London was our first stop, Madrid our end point. We figured on just over 3 weeks. Our first taste of Europe, London, proved initially to be much like any other large city. One positive difference was that help getting through and out of the airport was easily accessible. The tube, their subway, was clean and quite comfortable as we rode into the city for our initial stop, RNIB, where we met a friend and contact. Now, we've all heard about how in Britain automobile traffic drives on the left rather than the right side of the road. How is a person's mobility affected when using a guide dog or cane? Most of us probably think of automobile traffic in the abstract, and we know somewhere down deep in our psyche that if we are standing at a corner, vehicles approaching us from the left will be closer to us than traffic coming from the right. In countries where vehicular traffic drives on the left side of the road, vehicles approaching from the right are closer to us than those coming from the left. Hopping on and off a bus is disconcerting at first because it approaches from the right, and after boarding you turn right because the door is on the left side to find a seat instead of turning left. Essentially, we must adapt to these traffic patterns in the same way that drivers do. We spent much of our first day getting used to the rhythm of the city and the overall traffic patterns. One area which I can honestly say we had some difficulty coping with was roundabouts, like our traffic circles, but much more ubiquitous in the UK. We did not cross these independently. Page 35. London has a share of attractions, and we visited some, such as Parliament Square and the Greenwich Observatory, home to Greenwich Mean Time and the Prime Meridian. There are lots of other attractions, but one thing is clear: time waits for no one, and our itinerary included other stops and other experiences. But England does have one custom that I'm not sure we'd ever become accustomed to: baked beans for breakfast. But oh, the easy availability of Indian food made up for this. Next stop, Rochford, Essex. This is a small village east of London, which boasts having been the home of Anne Boleyn and, for a time, of Henry VIII. We were there to take part in an internet radio broadcast and, unexpectedly, to initiate a true and enduring friendship that will last for a long time. Next, off to County Leitrim, where Pam wanted to look up family. Our research showed that Leitrim, located in the Republic of Ireland, is the least populated county in the whole of Ireland. The luck of the Irish was with us, because frequent train service from Dublin met our needs. Speaking of the luck of the Irish, not only did we find a train to take us to the exact spot where Pam wanted to go, but we also came in contact with the owner of a bed and breakfast who was willing to transport us from the train station to her facility. Heck, all we asked her for was a number for a taxi. Most of our travel was via train and taxi, with the odd bus or trolley thrown in. Page 36, we arrived during a weekend of real celebration. The local schools were having a multi-year, multi-religion reunion. We were invited to some of the festivities, the theme of which was unification. This part of the Republic, quite close to the border with Ulster, was the focal point of religious strife over the years, so it was fitting that efforts were made to unify the population. Initially, there had been two schools, one Catholic and the other Protestant, which had been merged some years ago. A truly touching moment was after the reunion dinner, when a cake was cut by a nun and a local Protestant representative. The Irish are very hospitable people, and we were welcomed enthusiastically. Next, we wound our way south and east to Hereford, about halfway back to London. This entailed a ferry ride across the Irish Sea, and then a train through Wales and on into Hereford. This relatively small community happens to be the site of a college for the blind, and one outgrowth of this was that at least some of the restaurants had Braille menus. Hereford is also home to an impressive cathedral, which we toured, as well as looking at a medieval map known as the Mappa Mundi, a depiction of the way the world was viewed in the 15th century. Not surprisingly, Jerusalem was the center point. We were pleased to find a Braille guidebook available. We got a true feeling of the antiquity of the cathedral when our tour guide allowed us to touch a statue which, he said, had not been painted since before our own Declaration of Independence. Page 37. Next came what for me was one of the highlights of the trip, a ride through the tunnel on the Eurostar. This train leaves from London, attaining speeds of up to 200 miles per hour as it traverses southern England, the English Channel, and then one of two routes in France and Belgium. Our audible GPS did indeed record speeds of 190 mph through the French countryside. Here we really noticed the language change. Upon leaving London, the train's trilingual announcements were notably modified. On the French end of the channel, English suddenly went from first to third in line. A brief stop in Lille and then on to Strasbourg, where my brother-in-law served as our tour guide. Though Strasbourg is not the largest city in France, it is the secondary seat of power for the European Union, and so is an international city. A modern streetcar system traverses the city, along with numerous pedestrian and bicycle paths, so non-drivers are not at a significant disadvantage. The pedestrian pathways are on the center islands of the street, which was unsettling at first. Strasbourg was the one portion of this trip where neither of us spoke the language well. However, a smile can go a long way, and we found our way paved with our halting French and the limited English of those with whom we came into contact. Again, history was alive and well, as in the main cathedral stands an organ that was played by Mozart. Yes, I managed to reach over the balustrade to touch it. I could tell that it was not in playable condition. Oh, well. Page 38. On Sunday morning, only half awake, Pam leaped out of bed, rushing to the window to record the sounds of the near and distant church bells. Our final destination, Madrid, was a real treat and a great way to culminate our trip. We are both fluent Spanish speakers, so we were at far more of an advantage there than in France. Like London, Madrid has a clean, comfortable subway system that made getting around relatively easy. One major difference between Spain and the rest of Europe is their siesta time. Essentially, most business activities shut down between 2 and 5 p.m. and then open up again until about 8. Madrid has an attraction that exists nowhere else in the world. Tucked away in a suite of rooms in one of the buildings belonging to Once, O-N-C-E, the Organization of the Blind in Spain, is housed a museum especially designed for touch. There are three-dimensional tactile models depicting not only the great art treasures of the world, but also some international symbols of note. The Statue of Liberty, Tower of London, the Kremlin, and the Taj Mahal, for example. once has also made significant attempts to render the subways of Madrid accessible to blind persons by providing audible access to ticket machines and even braille signage on at least some of the railings leading down to the platforms. The ticket machines were the real winner, though. Touch the bottom left-hand portion of the screen, and voila, a voice came forth with instructions. Some final notes. International travel can change your life. In our case, we actually returned to England 2 months after leaving Madrid to spend some time with a couple we'd met in Essex and to celebrate my birthday, which happens to be a national day of celebration, Guy Fawkes Day. It's not often that a whole country erupts in fireworks displays and bonfires for your birthday. The second time around, we were able to really concentrate on one area and were honored to be a part of the Rochford community, albeit for a brief time. I know I speak for both of us when I say that the story of our international travels does not end here. We look forward to new explorations and new adventures in years to come.